Welcome to Mangfoldsmikrofon, the podcast that explores diversity and inclusion with the perspective of creating competitive advantage. As a proud partner of the SHE Conference, Social Human Equity Conference, this collaboration supports the conference's strong vision of promoting change until all are included. I am Michelle Chinnapin, and here organizations share their experience on how they succeed with diversity and inclusion as part of their strategy across people, brands, and partners. Plan International is a global organization working for children's rights and humanitarian aid. They operate in over 75 countries with nearly 10,000 staff members worldwide. My guest, Stephen Omolo, was himself once a child refugee, now CEO for Plan International. Before this, holding leadership roles within the humanitarian and development sector. We have had the honour of hearing him on the main stage at the SHE Conference in Oslo. With a PhD in political science, a master's in management and a master's in practicing management, as well as a Bachelor of Commerce and an MIT certification in digital business strategy, Mr. Omolo could have chosen any high-level corporate career. His path has been nothing but astonishing. I'm humbled and honoured to be able to have this conversation, where we speak about hope, values and leadership, and foremost his passion to keep up the pressure of securing children's rights and gender equality, especially, particularly, for girls. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you very much indeed.
You're at the SHE Conference today. You haven't been in Norway for the last 15 years. It was about time we got you back. I've heard you on stage today. Yes. What an amazing story. I said I've been stalking you online also, yes. So I know a bit about your story. But for the sake of the listener that might not have heard you on stage today, could you just introduce yourself a little bit and why you're here at the SHE Conference?
Yes. Well, my name is Stephen Omolo. I'm a child born in Uganda during the war. And this is many years ago. Lived throughout that my early childhood during the war, the notorious regime of Idi Amin that most people have forgotten about. But that is really what it was in those early days, in the early 90s, early 70s. But then moved into Kenya as because my parents from Kenya, but we had to relocate to Kenya because of the war. I had a very troubled upbringing, a very troubled childhood. And I hardly settled. I went to different homes to find peace in my mind. Mm. I was a child who did not have, who did not see a future. I was a child that did not have hope. Mm. I was a child who could only see trouble and was a troublemaker. And until I got a helping hand. And it is very important that children who go through trauma, children who go through a troubled upbringing, all the way to teenage life, always require a helping hand. Mm-hmm. That helping hand can come from outside. It doesn't necessarily come from family. It can mm-hmm. come from anywhere. And I got a helping hand to show me the direction. And that was a good direction of travel. And that was landing on the areas of education and transformation. Yeah. And that is why, for me, education is increasingly important in being a catalyst to make someone become a better person. Mm-hmm. And so, but then it did not happen just out of the blues, because the helping hands were so many in my life. Yeah. And I just begin by telling my story because there are so many children out there who look to me today because of the work that I do and say, is it true that that is your background? And how did you make it? Yeah. So today I'm the CEO for Plan International, which is a global organization present in over 70 countries, working to support young people, to support children, but also to address the issue of gender equality. Yeah. And I'm so proud to be the leader of this organization that I can actually stand strong to make girls and women empowerment a reality. Mm.
It's a very strong story. I understand that Ireland was a part of it, because I have a love of Ireland and yes. you have a love of yes. Ireland. So what did you do in, because you have...
I settled in Ireland. That's where I call my permanent home today. I got married there. And that's my home. Mm. And I think the Irish community, naturally, and for the history that they have, are very magnanimous people. I mean, there's so many decent people in the world today. I count myself lucky because I found a home in Ireland. Mm. But then I wanted to go back to the community where I came from to help the communities, especially those riddled with conflict. Sudan, Somalia, South Sudan, before even became South Sudan, many places, the Great Lakes region, Rwanda, during the genocide. So I worked in the humanitarian field, going back to the conflict areas to support the communities there. But most importantly, is to give the children and the young people hope.
Yeah.
And that is why I do the work that I do. So when I went to Ireland, I went back to Kenya to work with the Kenyan Red Cross for many years, and then deployed by the Irish Red Cross to go and continue working in the Great Lakes region in Rwanda and Tanzania. But I think I never looked back, because that has been my journey throughout in bringing in social change, equity, inclusion and diversity, and the work that we do to make us and make human beings land on the values. And those are the values of humanity I was referring to this morning, and I'm happy to talk about that as well.
It sounds so easy, isn't it? When you speak, it's like this is, but we see out in the world, it's not easy. You know, we could say it's just about being kind, which it is, but at the same time, it seems that kindness is not something that comes easy for everybody. You could have done anything. I mean, with your background, when it comes to your formal education, you have, there are so many masters and you have it's quite extensive. You could have been brilliant in the corporate world. But would you say that you found your place now?
The values. The values pushed me to do what I'm doing. The values that I see, that the breakdowns that I witnessed growing up as a child was as a result of those values undermined grossly by those in power, by the leaders, community leaders, by relatives, by people who did not want to carry those values with them. That is why we had the breakdowns that I witnessed growing up. And so I felt that as a society, you can have the opportunity to go into the corporate sector to go and do wonderful things in the world. And we need them, yes. But I chose deliberately to really come back to work on building the fundamental human values. Because I believe that we can only see the breakthroughs in society if we embrace those values, and not just as tokenism, but really putting them into practice in our life and what we do. And so that is what was the biggest driver for me to go back to the humanitarian, to really land on those values, because I believe that human decency is embedded within those values.
When it comes to the Nordic area, I can only speak for that area, then, you know, we talk, there's so many reports, McKinsey reports, BCG, all these reports about how diversity is a business, good business case, right? And that's why they are doing it, kind of, not necessarily all. But how can we kind of break it down and make it more tangible? Is there anything you can see is kind of stopping the progress in some way?
It's fear. It's fear of the unknown. And it's a breakdown in society. A breakdown in society that is looking at color, race, religion, background. And that determines who that person is. So it's boxed in your mind that that is what you see. You see race, you see color, you see religion, you see the background of the person. And you speak about my background. An idea is forming in your mind, and you sort of want to place me somewhere in a little enclave, in a little box. Now, but that's where the human decency comes in. And if you have to embrace diversity, we've got to overcome the barrier of fear and fear of the unknown. Because actually, we don't know what you're fearing. And I think it's a question also of living with uncomfortable. I think we fear to live with ambiguity. And I think there is nowhere in the world today where you can get 100% perfection. You've got to live with some level of ambiguity. And that is living with uncomfortable. Now, if you choose to live with uncomfortable, it means that you see people as equal. So nothing forms in your mind to the contrary. The third one for me is embracing diversity in all its forms, not choosing what is suitable to you. So embracing diversity in all its forms means that you try to implement that as an action plan for you as a person on a daily basis, inside your family and outside of the family. And embracing diversity in all its forms, meaning even the mental health challenges that communities face, the marginalized children who are neglected in many, many places, the LGBTQIA plus community that struggle even to come out in the open. Now, of course, in Norway, this could sound very weird because this is a democratic space where you don't even think, can that really happen? Mm-hmm. But then you go to certain countries in Africa and Asia, the LGBTQIA plus community cannot even be seen to be out. Yeah. Now, so that is embracing diversity in all its forms and shapes. Embracing diversity in addressing issues of gender equality. Mm-hmm. I was speaking to that earlier this morning, mm-hmm. you know? And
that's
and,
something close to your heart.
Very close to my heart. I can speak a little bit about it later. But I think there are certain bottlenecks that does not allow us to embrace diversity. Innovation. Now, innovation has been used, and I'm fully convinced that technology and innovation is a masterpiece in transforming change, in transforming us as society. But it's doing harm to many communities because of lack of awareness, because of education, because of propaganda, because of online abuse, targeting different marginalized communities. And then the second part where diversity is struggling, why we don't have inclusion, is because of access. Mm. We don't have access. Many communities still don't have access. So what I was sharing with the partners today and the business community and the partners who are here in this conference, which I think is a game changer, is that how do we ensure that we devolve the resources to the marginalized areas in this world? That if I go to Myanmar, then everyone in Myanmar will feel that we're all being treated equally, that we can access that mobile phone, we can access that technology, that the propaganda do not come from only the rich who have the access to the, but to all of us. And I think that is where we need to make the biggest difference.
Yeah. It is difficult though, because, you know, I grew up as one of the only ones in my community, and I have, you know, 90% of my network is Norwegian because that's what I grew up in. And I still feel that there is a lot of positivity, but passive positivity. You know what I say, that people who say, yeah, you go, I understand this is important for you. Stephen, I understand with your background, this is important for you.
Yeah.
Michelle, I understand because you've been through hardship that it's important for you. But me, I'll stand on the side and watch. Is that maybe one of the biggest barriers for progress, do you think?
But those, you know, Michelle, those who sit on the edge and to watch because they don't want to come in and engage, they fear.
Yeah.
It's fear. That's all. How will my community see me? How will I be seen? You know, I went to Ireland and got married to, and now going to some of the personal details, I hope you don't mind.
Yeah, I love it.
But I got married to, my wife is Irish, okay? And we were joking with my wife, and we said that, look, let's not take it for granted that people are going to see this as just normal. And even for those who may not just take it as normal, in a place where, in those years, I was the first black person in that particular enclave in Ireland, the first black person there. And I asked my wife, and I said, let's not take it for granted that everyone's going to accept it on both sides of the family, on my side of the family and on her side of the family. And so we had to work through that as well to see that even those who are sitting on the fence was just afraid of not knowing even how to approach me, or even not knowing how to ask us the open questions. So how do you find a mixed marriage? What are the challenges you face? How are you going to live in different, you know, context? How are your children going to grow up not being black and not being white?
Yeah.
And, you know, and we're forgetting that part, because the children growing up not knowing actually that, so where do you actually belong? Ireland or Africa? And who are we? Now, so these are the issues that have got to be confronted. Now, if you don't confront them, then it means that there is fear somewhere.
Yeah.
Fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
So even those who sit on the fence, they sit on the fence because they think that they are sitting on the fence because they don't. If you ask them, it's fear.
Yeah. I can very much relate to that because my father's Indian Malaysian and my mother's Norwegian. I was born in London. And when I moved to, you know, when I became an adult, I'm very, very proud of my Indian side as well as my Norwegian side. And I tried to kind of get into the Indian community in Norway. And I met closed doors because I'm half caste.
Yes.
And I was shocked.
Yes.
I was like, what? I'm not part of you either. You know, I'm not allowed anywhere.
Yes.
And then I decided that I decide where I belong. So if people ask me what you feel most like, I'm like, depends on the situation.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm sure
we've given our children the same space to feel most comfortable, if they feel comfortable in Africa, Kenya, and, or in Ireland, that they feel comfortable determining where they feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And that is a choice that you've got to give them as adults to make that determination. Now, of course, as children then, they'll look at us more where we are as parents.
Yeah.
You know, but when they grow up and they now become adults, then they have the choice to, you know, to determine their own future and their own life. So, but I think the point here is that as society, we've got to embrace diversity in all its forms, and embracing it, embracing it as a fundamental right.
Yeah. What kind of leader are you? Because you talk about value-based leadership.
Mm.
What is it like working for you?
It's values-based leadership, but embracing in entirety the feminism leadership principles.
Right, yeah.
I strongly believe that if you want to become a good leader, I know there are great leaders in this world, but there are very few.
Mm.
But you can strive to become a good leader by embracing to put into practice and believing in them, not just putting into practice as a tokenism, but believing in them.
Yeah.
Feminism leadership principles, no prejudice, no bias. It doesn't matter where someone is coming from. You land on the rights of humanity. It is important that you embrace that. And I think for me, if you ask me what kind of a leader, I think I would see myself as the leader that is driven by those fundamental values more than anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, I can talk about so many other things, but for me, it has to land on the values. Is that a weakness? I see it as a strength.
Yeah.
Is a strength. It has carried me in all the most difficult contexts where I've worked by embracing those fundamental human values. And if people can only say that, Stephen, during your time working as a global CEO for this great organization called Plan International, what are you leaving behind? But that I have been relentless and robust in pushing for those human values.
What's the next big goal that you want to achieve in the work that you're doing? I'm sure I can see a person with milestones.
I am truly convinced that humanitarian and development work will not be successful if we don't empower local civil society.
Yeah.
And young people.
Mm.
The local civil society are the engines for change, for growth, and for development. Internationalism is good. Multilateralism is good, but it's got to be embedded in local ownership.
Yeah.
And that local ownership can only happen if we have vibrant, strong, empowered, well-resourced civil society that can work in democracy, that can work in development, that can work in gender equality, that can work of youth on youth entrepreneurship and youth empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the first thing, really landing on developing strong civil society that will speak truth to power.
Yeah.
The second thing is young people. Close to 70% of the global population. I mean, just mind-boggling. Just pause for a moment and think of it. 70% of the global population is comprising of young people. We cannot be sitting in conferences and in big meetings, us sitting at the table without having the young people at the core of the decision-making. We've got to make the deliberate attempt and really mean it when we bring young people to the core of the discussions we have on climate change, on peace building and conflict resolution. I've never seen a better conflict resolution mechanism that is successful when you don't have women and young people at the table.
Mm.
The best peacemakers and mediators that I know in my lifetime have been women who bring communities together and talk about peace building and conflict resolution. Mm. These are women-led groups in the community at the grassroots level. That's where the change is going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm totally convinced that this is the right thing to do if we want to make the change that we need in society.
We are privileged, you and I. You know, even though we've both had long journeys, yours a lot longer than mine. My father did your journey, right? That's why, so I would represent what your children have. And we're privileged. We're sitting in this amazing car in Oslo in a Polestar. I need to just mention that because, and I haven't been paid to say it, but it is an amazing car. And it's just to point out how privileged we are in this situation here. What would you what do you think those who participate in the She Conference should leave here with? If we can end on that note.
It's a call for action.
Mm.
I challenge the audience in the auditorium this morning that if there is only one thing you want to take away from this conference, put it down on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And don't take 3 things, 4 things, 5 things, just take one.
Yeah.
And have a clarion call that at an individual level or a family level or at a collective, organization-wide, it doesn't matter, that you've picked one thing from this conference that is going to lead you make that change and transformation.
Mm.
Now, I challenged them and I told them, if you ask me, I'm going to tell you anyway, start rolling back the years for the world to attain gender equality.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable that we are all sitting here and we talk about it every day, that it will take us 131 years to attain gender equality. Mm. It's unacceptable. You and me can actually roll back that clock today. By addressing it at a family level, by getting the boys, if you have boys and girls in the family, by telling the boys that you're all equal. You're all going to do the house chores together. It's not just the girls who are going to be doing it.
Mm.
If you're going to be fetching firewood and whatever, you're going to go do it together.
Yeah.
You can start by doing that at a family level, by ensuring that you embrace the gender equality.
Mm.
It doesn't have to be these big, big buzzwords and the big things you're waiting for the government to do. No. Change starts at a unit level before you get it to the macro level.
Mm.
It has to be micro-led before you achieve the success at a macro level.
Mm.
So that for me is very important. So I challenged everyone here. So what big thing will I take from this conference? Honestly, She Conference, 10 years of change and transformation, it's now become global. It's the right thing to do. Great job that is happening here. And I think we've got to make the right noise. And that right noise is to bring the issues of diversity, inclusivity, and gender equity
yeah.
in the world mm. today.
Stephen, it's been an absolute privilege. I was so nervous before we met, but it's been a privilege. I hope you've enjoyed the talk.
It was wonderful. Yeah. It was wonderful. I mean, I was told it was 20 minutes. I said, what are we going to talk about in 20 minutes?
And but then
it's already 20 plus.
Yes,
it was wonderful. It was
Thank
wonderful.
You so
Thank
much.
You so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Please share this valuable conversation and experience so we can reach those who have started their own work within diversity, inclusion and equity. If you're curious, are in the start phase of your own process or want to explore your existing work in this area, feel free to contact me. It is only by active participating in the conversation that you can contribute to change. It is only by sharing that we can shorten the time that this may take. My name is Michelle Chinnapin, and I wish to leave personal, positive footprints.